Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details.
Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, Preds back on the ice tonight. 7 o'clock puck drop against the Tampa Bay Lightning at Bridgestone Arena. Pre-game at 6 o'clock. And joining us now on the program, head coach of the Belmont Bruins basketball team as college hoops is in full swing now, Casey Alexander, joining us here on the show. Coach, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well. I know you guys get a W over Middle Tennessee State over the weekend. And just in general, I know you've beaten Lipscomb. And you've beaten Middle, and obviously, historically, Belmont's played everybody in the area. What does it mean to just get a win and to continue to grow basketball, you know, just from a presence standpoint in this area right now that feels like a college basketball hotbed?
Yeah, well, winning's always better than losing, and bragging rights are what they are. You know, I think at this stage of the season, we're still got a lot of room to grow just as a team, and for this team to be as good as it can be. But it's nice to win along the way, and you know, there's some recruiting battles that will always happen year after year, and so the more you win, the better your chances.
Yeah, it is. Coach, what have you seen? Because college basketball is tricky at the beginning of the season, and you see all the top teams. They lose games, they win games. But the great thing about college basketball is that nothing matters until – you know, right before March, before the tournament. And then once tournaments get going, that's when it really matters. But what have you seen from your team early on that may have been one of those situations where you were trying to figure out during the preseason practices? Is there anything that your team has gotten better that they're sort of ahead of schedule in your eyes?
I wouldn't consider anything ahead of schedule. You know, I think what we've seen is that we have the ability to be a really good team. Mm-hmm. You know, when, as any coach would say, we're executing and doing the things that we're supposed to do. You know, we've been pretty frustrated at our inconsistency, and I don't think we've played poorly at all. But we've had too many moments, you know, where we've kind of lost focus or we've lost execution or things like that. And that's part of a new team, and that's part of an early season. But we've now played 8 games, and we need to see less and less of that.
So what are those things? You know, Illinois State, you lose by 7 there. You lose by 5 at St. Louis. That's a really good program. You lose by 5 against Eastern Washington. These are close games, Coach. What has been the common theme through those 3 losses that you think, hey, that's the thing I'm going to pull out and fix moving forward into conference play?
Yeah, literally all 3 of those games were decided in the last minute. We had a chance to take the lead at St. Louis and at Eastern Washington inside of 30 seconds. And then the Eastern Illinois game is very, very similar. And, you know, and when you get down to that stage of the game, you know, at any level, it becomes – you know, almost entirely about execution. Execution will put you in the place to perform, you know, and we've done a poor job of that. I've done a poor job of making sure that we're in sync and we've got good actions called, and then the guys haven't executed to our liking, and so we're 0-3 in those situations. Middle, we kind of turned the page a little bit. They made a nice little run on us in the second half, but we just kind of steadied ourselves with, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes to go, and we were really good down the stretch, and that game wasn't even in doubt, you know, that last media timeout. So we're learning and getting better.
Now, Coach, you, out of the 7-8 games you play, you only played 2 at home. Every other game has been on the road. Is that a good thing early on for a team like yours, first year coach, so a young team? Is that good for a young team to play a lot of their games away to start the season off?
In hindsight, yeah, mm-hmm. it'll serve us well. You know, I mean, would I prefer that? No. Did I draw it up that way on purpose? No. Matter of fact, I didn't have anything to do with it. But
I was gonna say you can blame Rick. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, we were in an event, an MTE they call it these days, which is a, you know, a tournament, but that's not really a tournament. But you mm-hmm. end up playing a lot of games. I mean, we have 5 games in 10 days. And that included a trip to Boston and back, mm-hmm. and a trip to St. Louis and back, and a trip to Eastern Washington, which is basically Spokane and back. And, you know, so we went over 8,000 miles in 10 days and played 5 games. And so we were we were pretty spent by the time that was over, but we learned a lot, and it'll definitely help us. At this stage of the year, everything helps the growth of your team.
Now, Coach, and I know a lot of these tournaments, they count on the schedule. They're not preseasons, but they count. They're not. It really doesn't matter until you start to get into league play, even though you want to have a really good out-of-conference schedule, win-loss record. But would you like a preseason in college basketball to kind of get your guys kind of going and not have to play all of these swing games? Like you said, you play five games and traveled so many miles. Would you rather just have, you know, two or three preseason games and then kind of get into it?
No, I mean, the format's okay. But we deal with different things. For example, tomorrow is our dead day for exams, and then we have a week of exams, and at Belmont we can't play during exams, you know. So that's an unusual situation for college athletics where 8 days in the middle of your season you can't play, you know. And then we got Thanksgiving break last week, and so, okay, you're going to give your guys at least a couple of days off, and there's no students, there's no fans around, so you're not going to play, you know, on Wednesday or Friday or whatever. So we just have to navigate a lot of those things, and that is the way that it is. You know, Christmas breaks the same way. There just aren't a lot of people around to watch games. So, but it's still all important. I mean, you know, Belmont's an at-large team last year, and for the NCAA tournament, and that had more to do with what happened non-conference than it did in conference. Mm-hmm. They had a nice in-conference season, but the best two wins in the OVC last year. For all teams, the best two wins were Belmont beating Lipscomb twice. That literally had the most. That literally was the what propelled them into the NCAA tournament. And obviously, those games are in November and December,
which of course is coming up this evening. Lipscomb at Belmont tonight, 6:30 p.m. Go get your tickets to the Curb Event Center. Of course, going to be a great matchup there. Battle of the Boulevard. Obviously, we've asked you like 4,000 times all the different emotions that you're feeling about this game, and it certainly will be another one tonight as you guys get a win in the rivalry in the first leg, and now the second leg is tonight. I'm curious because I know your former boss and the former coach, of course, at Belmont, Rick Burr, was a big efficiency, sabermetrics, you know, he's a big numbers guy. I know that about him. You guys are 78th right now in KenPom. How much of that stuff do you pay attention to at this stage of the season? Like you said, you're an at-large team last year, Belmont was, because of what they did in the non-conference. How much are you able to pay attention to that now, and how much of that do you have to put aside and focus on the task at hand?
Yeah, I mean, I use analytics for a variety of reasons, but they're almost all, you know, strategic. It's offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. I've got to put up on my computer, all Lipscomb's out-of-bounds plays and their percentages of this and their percentages of that, you know. So I'm looking at those things. I'm not necessarily looking at what our ranking is. And KenPom is as good as KenPom is at this point in time, it matters none. I mean, as far as, you know, it'll even itself out. You know, it has to start somewhere based on last season and who you got coming back, and then it works itself out. But we start looking at things like that in January, February, because that's really a true measure of, you know, what the rankings are.
Casey Alexander joining us here, Belmont coach. I think there's a common misconception amongst like sort of casual and maybe aging college basketball fans that is like, oh, they're like opining the loss of the mid-range jump shot, and they're just going, oh, where did that go? And I feel like if you study all this stuff, the efficiency numbers, you could argue that the mid-range jumper is the least efficient shot on the floor, right?
Yeah, there's no argument. I mean, it's remarkable. When you can look at any of the statistics, and the NBA started all this, but, you know, a shot at the rim is, you know, is a 78% value, and then if you take a step back, it's a 71% value, and if you take two steps back, it's a 55% value, and, you know, so that decreases all the way to the three-point line, you know, and then because you obviously get the extra point at the three-point line, that number goes way back up, and so it just you know, there are some guys who have the niche to score at all three levels, meaning three-point line, mid-range, and at the rim. But unless you're really one of those guys, it's almost a better possession. We talk to our team. I'll put it this way: we talk to our team defensively and say, "Hey, a contested two is a win for us defensively. They might make it, but that's what we're trying to get right there is a contested two."
Do you think it ever changes, or do you think it's just gone?
Like, I don't see how it'll change. Yeah, I don't. I mean, everything runs in cycles, of course, but, the game now is such a positionless game. Five guys spread the floor, guys that can, you know, that have all the skills. And so it's just not going to, I mean, unless they just keep moving the, you know, three-point line back to a measure that, you know, is ridiculous for college, then I would say that the trend will continue the way that it's going.
Now, Coach, I know you said you had nothing to do with the schedule, and I believe that. but would you like, I mean, because this Lipscomb game is such a huge rivalry game, would you like this game so spread out a little bit more? Because, you played these guys, a couple of weeks ago?
Right.
And then now you play them again. It just seems like it would better serve – I think both programs, if you spread it out some, and then I think you get a better matchup because both of the teams would be a little bit more seasoned.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, the best case scenario would be, that we're in the same conference and mm-hmm. that we're playing these games in January and February and standings matter and everything else. And, you know, that's been the case for most of our 100 years of playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
But when Belmont left to go to the OVC in 2012, well, that eliminated that option. And so now we're in the situation that I was referencing earlier. I mean, we only have so many weeks to play these games,
mm-hmm.
and we're not going to play them when school's not in session. You know, so we weren't going to play them last week because Thanksgiving and nobody's in class. We can't play this coming week because it's exam week and we can't play. And after that, school's over. There's no students here. There's no faculty and staff. And, you know, it's just so we have to squeeze them in November and early this week of December so that our people can come.
Exactly.
Well, it makes for a great event no matter when it happens. And tickets are available. BelmontBruins.com, of course. Go there. Check it out right now. Curb Event Center tonight, 6:30 p.m., obviously. God's time, Central Time. Coach, thank you so much, man. We do appreciate you, bud.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Absolutely. I think it's fascinating. And Rick Bird is the guy who really turned me on to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a unique thought. But the mid-range jumper, I think the hay's out of the barn. I think that
they're not going back to that.
And old basketball fans, I hear you. I respect what you're thinking when you go, man, the old days, all it is dunks and threes. And I get like why that is, a complaint of older basketball fans. But if you think about the risk-reward, percentage mm-hmm. of shooting versus reward that you get, the mid-range two is the dumbest shot on the floor. And
but
you heard Coach
say
it. He's like, it's not even close. Yeah, it's the worst option.
That's why the center position has become sort of obsolete because centers are usually mid-range to low post. Now, when you have a guy – now you have these sort of hybrid centers that can step out to the three-point line like Anthony Towns,
got to have a stretch four.
Yeah. Anthony Davis, he can stretch. Carl Anthony Towns, excuse me. Anthony Davis can stretch it. With Philadelphia, he can stretch the floor, their center, Joel Embiid. So if you're going to have a low post presence, he has to be able to stretch the floor with some sort of three-point shot. Lopez can do it. Not Brooke, but the other one. He can stretch. He can stretch the floor with a three-pointer. So you're right.
I can't believe a Lopez twin got a mention on the show today.
You're right. That mid-range shot. Is you could be one of the best mid-range shooters in college basketball.
Grant Williams made a career out of it.
And people just look over it because if you are not dominating the low post or shooting the three at a high percentage, what value are you to the team?
Yeah, it's a risk-reward shot, and it is the lowest risk. It is the highest risk and the lowest reward of any shot on the floor, mm-hmm. the mid-range game. And that's why you got to be special. You got to be Grant Williams to be able to use that routinely. Speaking of the Tennessee Volunteers basketball program, I got a thought. Mm-hmm. I have one thought, a thought on the Tennessee Vols basketball program. I watched a lot of the game against Florida State and a little bit of the VCU game over the weekend. Tennessee splits. They lose to Florida State, their first loss of the year. They beat VCU, a really nice win. Lamonte Turner making a three-pointer at the buzzer. I have one thought on Tennessee Volunteer basketball, and then we'll get back into Tennessee Volunteer football, the reason for Tennessee fans' optimism moving forward. We will do that when we return right here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, The Game. If you miss any of the show, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify, or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio, rate, review, and subscribe today. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. Marquise Munson producing. And I had a quick Tennessee basketball thought. I know we haven't mm-hmm. like delved too deep into the college basketball world yet, as it is still football season across the country. But they do. Tennessee Volunteers lose to Florida State over the Thanksgiving weekend, 60-57. I thought they fought valiantly in that game, but I did have an observation. They came back and Lamonte Turner made a three-point buzzer beater to give them a win over VCU down in this high school tournament in like Florida or whatever. And
it still was a big shot.
It was a huge shot, and VCU's ranked, so you beat a ranked team. It's a great resume builder. I still came away from the tournament, though, with one thought, like just sort of a combo thought here about Tennessee basketball. Mm-hmm. Every time I've seen them, they're a very good defensive team. They have no post presence on offense. I know Pons is turning into a really nice player, but he doesn't feel like a guy you run the offense through on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And athletically, I just thought Florida State just out-athleted Tennessee. And that's, I think that's a, that was the concern with last year's team,
mm-hmm.
was when they get into a big spot in the tournament and you get into the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, and the Final Four, like you have to play against elite-level prospects, great talent. And I don't know what Tennessee's quote-unquote talent level is yet. They are very good at on the perimeter. They've got a lot of talent and a lot of guys that can make shots and handle the basketball. But I don't you know, James is a really nice-looking player as a freshman, more of a wing player. They don't have a lot. I don't know. I just thought – I watched Florida State run up and down the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought Florida State was a far more athletic team, and it's why they won the game. I don't know if they were a better coach team, but – the athletic ability showed for Florida State, and I thought it's why Tennessee lost its first game. I don't know. Maybe I'm making too much of one game.
Yeah, I mean, UT.
In a high school gym in November.
I mean, hey, might as well do it. Do it now. And no, UT is a team, obviously, losing the guys that they lost. And you knew this was going to be sort of – I mean, they lost three NBA players.
Right.
And, you know, you knew there was going to be some type of – you know, transition, but they're 6-1 right now. I think they're top 25 team. I think they're ranked 20-21. So they are playing good basketball. But how long? Once they get into conference play, that's when I think it'll start to show up. You know, I want to see the Memphis game. I want to see how they match up against Memphis.
Yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
Memphis will still be without their top recruit.
Yeah, James Wiseman.
Yeah, James Wiseman. He doesn't come back until after the New Year's.
Yeah, I think it's like January 12th or something.
Yeah,
like that.
So they will be without their top, you know, player. But that's still going to be. I think that's going to. That's a measuring stick, I believe, for UT basketball team. Where do they 100%. Stack up against, you know, other ranked teams?
And more importantly, at raw, pure athletic ability.
Exactly.
That's what Memphis brings to the table. And obviously, there's lots of history between these two. It's great that these two are playing, especially with Penny Hardaway causing all the...
Yeah, I want Penny to say something else.
All the ruckus he's causing out there. I love it. I think it's... Dude, it is what's in Memphis's best interest.
Of course, for
him to cause... sort of stir it up a little bit and create attention for his program.
It does nothing for UT to stir anything up. Does nothing for their program.
No, they'll just cancel the series.
Exactly.
Rick Barnes will just take his ball and go home.
Absolutely.
Be like, we'll stop playing you.
Now Penny can stir it up, you
yes,
know,
he's got
and get it going.
Although he's already made plenty of national headlines in 2 years. There's no mm-hmm. question. Listen, John Fulkerson, like, I think he's a nice player.
Uh-huh.
But like, he just does, he's averaging 10-6. Like, they just don't. John Fulkerson is not a reason you're going to win tournament games. Like I know it's a rebuilding year, and I guess you get spoiled with all that talent on the roster. So I don't think expectations should be anywhere near where they were the last couple of seasons. But I think Tennessee fans have built up this coaching staff and this program now to a point where they expect wins, and that's a good thing. And the fact that they get a win over VCU and they can hang with a Florida State team there are some positive signs there. I just wonder about their upside, just like I did last year, because of athletic ability.
Well, I mean, they can do it because we saw Auburn do it last year. Auburn has had this three guard rotation where they were just shooting from the outside and they were lighting people up.
Slightly different style, though.
Exactly.
The way they play defense.
UT, that's the thing. They got to be able to play. Auburn was great at defense. UT, if they are able to play really good defense, I think these three guards, they're going to turn out to be some of the best three guards in college basketball, in Bowden, Turner, and Pons. All three of them are averaging double digits right now. So if they can get it on the defensive end, I think they'll be able to play the type of basketball that Auburn played last year with their guards.
And I think they can be very good on defense. You know, 41 points against Alabama State, 46 against UTC. I know those are bad programs, but whatever. You know, you hold Florida State to 60, you keep VCU under 70. I think they're going to be a good defensive team. I just wonder when they go up against a lengthy, rangy team mm-hmm. in the front court, how do they create offense? And I think that's going to be interesting to watch as the season rolls along. Tony Barnhart going to join us coming up in just a few minutes. And one of the things I'd like to talk to him about is one of the reasons. There's obviously a ton of optimism around the Tennessee Volunteer football program right now, and rightly so. You win five straight. You win, five out of six there down the stretch. And of course, this team is surging into the postseason. They got the early signing period. They've got a top 20 recruiting class right now. A lot of positive signs for Tennessee. But one of the reasons I would be most excited is all the freshmen that at the end of the year after 12 games, you could see how important this particular freshman class is for Jeremy Pruitt today and moving forward. When Eric Gray has the day he did against Vanderbilt, Henry Toto, the two tackles, all the defenders that got minutes and snaps and plays on defense, they're going to lose some seniors, and that freshman class basically all hits. So what is the next step for Jeremy Pruitt? What does the next big thing look like? And Tony Barnhart going to join us. We'll talk coaching openings in the SEC and why Tennessee fans should be optimistic about their program moving forward outside of the obvious winning five games down the stretch. We'll talk to Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, when we return. His name is Derek Mason. My name is Braden Gall. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And, man, what you need to be optimistic about moving forward is Cool Springs MD. And I've told you this for over a year now. They have helped. They've started to help more men seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife, Daphne, and that experienced staff, great staff and experience, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. That's why I tell you, man, you need to be optimistic about your future. Because if you want your future to be great, then you need to go see the good folks at Cool Springs MD. Because their services, I've already helped many men in the Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune system, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And who doesn't want that? And there's no better time now to achieve a healthier lifestyle. Man, what are you waiting on? Summer is approaching. I know we hadn't even got through winter yet, but summer's coming. Spring break is coming, man. You know, you go on the beach. Don't be scared to take your shirt off. You know, don't be scared to run around with your kids. Because if you're tired now, then this is what you need to do. If you're looking for a healthier lifestyle, this is what you need to do. You need to go see the good folks at Cool Springs MD. Make an appointment today. Don't wait until tomorrow. Tomorrow, do it today. Pull over if you're driving. If you're at your desk, pull out a pencil or a pen and write this number down. Store it in your cell phone. 615-486-3458. 615-486-3458. Listen, they've helped me. They definitely can help you. So go visit their website also, coolspringsmd.com.
Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you guys for joining us. Marquise Munson producing. Three silly season, three job openings in the SEC. The University of Washington announced a coach resigning and hired a coach all in one press release. It's very efficient up there in Seattle in the Pacific Northwest. Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, joining us here on the show. TB, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. This time of year, man, it's always fun watching the news and charting where planes are flying across the country, isn't it?
It is, and with the advent of the new recruiting calendar, the early signing day in December, it is doubly crazy because all these coaches, even the ones that are looking for jobs or may want another job here or there, they're having to recruit for their old school, and guys have been fired. But the Ole Miss coaching staff, for example, they're out recruiting today. Okay, they just say, go recruit, we'll keep paying you. And it's just December is just, oh, and oh, by the way, we're going to crown a bunch of conference champions this weekend too. So
which job is better? Take away the rosters. Don't look at the current rosters for me, but just sort of considering fan support, financial support, you know, where you're located geographically, access to players, all the things that coaches consider. You look at Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Missouri. How do you rank those three relative to the Big Seven in the SEC and to each other?
Oh, Ole Miss is number one by far. I mean, Ole Miss has got a lot of things going for it. First of all, it's located in a prime recruiting territory just up the road from Memphis. So many good players there. Mississippi is a better state than a lot of people know when it comes to talent. So first of all, you're the University of Mississippi. Secondly, it's a great place to go to school, and it's a great place to live. And so the money is there, the fan interest is there. And having said all that, I wasn't real crazy about the decision to let Matt Luke go, but that's another topic. But of those games, of those jobs, Ole Miss would be one, I think, probably Mississippi State two and Arkansas three.
Now, there's a lot of coaches out there, obviously, that potentially want jobs at either one of these universities is in the SEC. So whether we think is a good program or not, just about any job is a good job if you're looking to be a head coach. But the name I have not seen that I think would be, you know, the next hot thing is Joe Brady. Do you think there will be a school, a university that seriously go after Joe Brady?
Listen, you cannot understate the job that Joe Brady has done at LSU, because it was the right combination of offense, execution of the offense, and having the right player to pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. So he's done a tremendous job. But does that translate in the guy's 30 years old? Does that translate into turning over one of these jobs to a guy who's never been a head coach? And he's never been a coordinator. He is sort of co-coordinator at LSU. So yeah, would he be the hot guy and yeah, all of that? But the thing, before I hire him, I said, have you got a guy? Do we have a guy like Joe Burrow to pull the trigger?
Tony Barnhart.
I'll be interested. I just don't know that I'm going to turn over one of these multi-million dollar programs to a 30-year-old guy who's got to go out and find him a quarterback.
Have you heard his voice, Tony? Like, do you know what he sounds like?
I have no idea.
Right. That's what we were trying to figure out.
I think Bruce Feldman did an interview with him like a couple of weeks ago, and it's like the first interview he's ever done in his entire career, like as a coach or player. Yeah, like no one's ever talked to the guy. So I'm with you. I think he's a little inexperienced, but man, like you said, you can't understate how good he's done. And that means LSU goes into Atlanta 12-0, probably no matter what happens, they're in the playoff, which I think is fair. They've earned that right. Georgia's defense is spectacularly good. I don't think people realize how good they are statistically. Can Georgia make this the LSU-Auburn game this year? Can they make it a 23-20 game and win in Atlanta?
That's exactly the roadmap. What I've said for about a week now is that for Georgia, it's really simple. If they can keep the game in the 20s, they have a chance to win. If the game gets into the 30s, I don't think Georgia can win that game. That's not how they're built. So that's number one. And it's really going to be won by the defense, and Jake Fromm's going to have to make the plays when the plays are presented to him. Now, he's been good. His percentage has not been good the last four games, but he has made plays when the plays have been available. And the other thing for Georgia, and this is, I can't overstate this, I can't stress it too much, is DeAndre Swift has got to be close to 100%. I mean, he is the X factor in this game. Georgia's ability to run the ball, move the chains, limit LSU's number of possessions is going to play a big part in this. Now, Georgia's got some depth at running back. We know that. But DeAndre Swift is special.
Now, looking at right now, the top four, we know who the top four is. You know, whether it changes in order, it's yet to be seen as far as the committee. But that 5 through 7 is going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. If Oklahoma is 5 and Utah 6? Does Baylor 7, can Baylor get in beating Oklahoma and Utah winning?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think the committee will look at Oklahoma completely different than they would a Baylor. Mm-hmm. I still think it's going to be a big debate on Oklahoma versus Utah. I mean, you look at the way that Utah is playing right now, and right now they're 6, okay? Mm-hmm. And Oklahoma's 7. Now, obviously, with Alabama losing, I expect Utah to be 5 and Oklahoma to be 6. But it's going to be the argument between a 12-1 Utah and a 12-1 Oklahoma is going to be pretty doggone intense. Because mm-hmm. if you look at Utah, that is a really good football team. They've got about 7 guys on that defense who have a chance to play in the NFL, and that's that is unusual.
Tony Barnhart joining us here, Mr. College Football. And Jeremy Pruitt wins five games down the stretch. They obviously are surging. They win five games in the SEC. Now, they only beat one team, Kentucky, with a winning record. But who cares? Beating teams that you're supposed to is still a giant step forward for Tennessee. Butch Jones got this team to a point in the preseason where they were picked to win the SEC East. And they had a good quarterback in Josh Dobbs. How far away from that is Jeremy Pruitt and Tennessee?
I don't think it's terribly far, because you look at the way that they played, the way they played down the stretch. You know, they beat Kentucky, and only two teams beat Kentucky in the final seven games of the season. The other one was Georgia in a driving rainstorm. And I've written this several times, guys, that if not Ed Orgeron is going to be your SEC Coach of the Year, he'll probably be National Coach of the Year. Certainly deserves it. If not for Ed Orgeron, I think Jeremy Pruitt would be your SEC Coach of the Year. Because they were so far in the ditch this year. And sometimes the great coaching job is not the guy that goes 12-0. It's the guy who keeps a 2-9 season, keeps a tough season from turning into 3-9. And that's what he did. Because they were headed to a historically awful season, and they got it back on the road.
Now, Tony, we had a discussion earlier about Vanderbilt and Derek Mason and how, you know, maybe they need to do it a different way. Not necessarily coaching, but schematics, trying to do it a different way. We've seen other teams in the SEC try to win a different way. Do you think Vandy would be better suited if they tried to win a different way, whether it be triple options, some other way where they can get these non-conference game victories and sort of these swing game victories? Because the way they're doing it now, they just it's hard for them to compete week in and week out.
It is. And my recommendation is go out and make sure you got a Kyle Shurmur, okay? Because, you know, what happened in Vanderbilt this year was entirely predictable. Not only do you lose Kyle Shurmur, none of the quarterbacks you brought in were very good. That's number one. Number two, you lost Andy Ludwig, your offensive coordinator, to Utah. Well, guess what he's doing at Utah? That's turned out really well for them. I thought those were two really big losses for Vanderbilt, and because they had three of the best skill people in the country and could not take advantage of that. Why? Because they didn't get good enough quarterback play. You cannot be average at the quarterback position anymore. You just can't. It used to be you could run the ball and play defense and be average at the quarterback position. Well, guess what? You can't do that anymore. And so Vanderbilt's got to figure out who it wants to be and make sure they get the personnel to run that offense.
Tony, you talk to a lot of coaches. I talk to coaches, and I think there's a theme that, you know, playoff expansion will be more inclusive somehow, and we'll get – obviously more teams would get into the playoff, but I actually think if you talk to coaches, they'll tell you it's going to make winning the national title far more difficult, because then you have to win three or four elite-level games. Can you explain – like, do you fall into the group of – hey, if we expand, sure, you might get into the tournament, but it still just means that the best of the best of the best, the blue bloods, the haves versus the have-nots, are still going to win all the championships, because now it's going to be even harder to win a national title.
Yeah, in that regard, it's not going to change anything, unless you think that, you know, Memphis is going to come out. You know, Memphis, Mike Norvell's done an incredible job. But for a team like Memphis, the problems that exist are always going to exist. And, you know, I know. Look, we're going to have an 18 playoff. It's going to happen, but it's going to happen later rather than sooner. And nobody has shown me a method that will work yet. Well, let's just get rid of the conference championship games. Let's do that. Okay, fine. Well, the SEC said, fine, we'll do that. That'll be $14 million, please. Okay? they're not going to do that. So, yeah, it would. Having eight teams makes it, you know, you don't have to be a genius, makes it exponentially different, because you got to win three games instead of two to win the national championship. So,
yeah, I think if you talk to coaches, they'll tell you they don't want it to expand. They like if you're Kyle Whittingham, your best path to a championship right now is for a 14 playoff where you only have to win two games, not a chance to win three.
The only pushback that I would give you on that, Braden, is that if you go to eight, what's going to happen now is the definition of having a good season will be, did you make the playoffs, okay? And that will ratchet up the pressure on the coaches to make the playoffs. It's just like now.
Right.
A basketball coach, if you don't make the NCAA tournament 3 years in a row, I don't care if you win 23 or 24 games. That doesn't matter. Did you get into the tournament? If you didn't, you're gone. And the standards are going to be the same for the coaches. Did you get it? Now that it's easier to get into the playoffs, we can demand that you get into the playoffs on a more consistent basis.
I'm fine putting more pressure on the guys that make all the money. The problem is that trickles down to all the players eventually having to work harder. Tony Barnhart, always a pleasure, my friend. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday. Enjoy championship weekend.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Absolutely. Tony Barnhart there. And by the way, a little college football at the top of the hour. Mark Hudspeth, head coach of the Austin Peay Govnas, having arguably the greatest season of all time. They are in a 32-team playoff.
Wow.
We'll find out what he thinks about that coming up top of the hour. But when we return, stick to sports right here on Morning Drive. Well, it's about 8:45 here on Morning Drive. Live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. And it's right around that time of the day where we have to stick to sports.
Is a crazy place.
Crazy sounding pretty good right now.
Let's lighten the mood.
After all that seriousness, you're just going to crumple it up and throw it in the trash.
And stick to sports. Now, on Morning Drive.
Oh, Stick to Sports is brought to you by Decorated Den Interiors. Stick with the pros at Decorated Den. Single men that are moving here with your significant other. I know y'all, there's a lot going on. And y'all can't quite, you know, buckle down and get everything as far as decorating together. Well, listen, Bonnie and Decorating Den is there to help you. They are there. They're one of the best in the state of Tennessee, definitely here in the city. So go check them out. They give you a complimentary appointment, which is free. Y'all probably didn't get it free somewhere else, but it's free here. So check them out online, decoratedden.com.
Number one.
Man, that new addition. I love that new addition, man. You know, the Seahawks receivers did a rendition of that dance in that music video last night, their celebration dance. That's why I got that idea. They're awesome. Love some new addition, man. And they're in my time span. But I've noticed that, you know, as we get older and, you know, there's younger generations coming up, they don't really know a lot about older music. And I will say, because yesterday, Billie Eilish, she is a singer, an alternative rock singer. She's winning a lot of awards. She's the top Grammy nominee this year, and she's 17 years old. Jimmy Kimmel asked her a question, and he was kind of throwing some names out there. He threw away the name Van Halen, and she did not know who Van Halen was. Oh. And so a lot of people got on her on Twitter.
I don't even like him, and that bothers me.
Yeah, and a lot of people got on her about on Twitter, but I'm just like, she's 17 years old.
But it doesn't matter. If you are in this business, whether it be sports, entertainment, and you are one of the top singers or performers or players, you gotta know your history. Yeah. You just have to. That's disrespect to the people that paved the way in your genre. So you're able to go on to Jimmy Kimmel at 17,
right,
and be able to show your talent. You gotta at least know the top ones.
I totally agree. It's why, off the top of my head, I can tell you about the 1983 Civil War between Oregon and Oregon State, where they had 11 turnovers and 4 missed field goals. And this final score, it was nicknamed the Toilet Bowl, and the final score was 0-0.
Oh, wow.
Oregon State, 0-0, 11 turnovers, 1983. Look it up.
Goodness gracious.
That's called knowing your history right there.
Yeah, Vince Scully, I don't know that guy. Who's Vince Scully?
Yeah, you do.
I know. I'm just kidding.
But
it's
yeah,
a
you
joke.
Got,
I know
you
Vince
got
Scully.
To. I'm not going to, I wouldn't, ridicule the young lady.
No.
But you got
it.
I mean,
but you know,
listen,
what it does? It makes you more valuable as a commodity when you can go out there and entertain and talk about things that all generations know about.
Exactly.
It adds value to your personality.
See, we had this issue a little bit in hip hop when the littles started coming out, the little Yachty's, the little whoever's of the world. And I remember little Yachty once said, and he's a young kid, he's like he's in his 20s, probably 23, 24 now, but back then he was like 19, 20. And he made a comment about Drake, saying that Drake was a bigger artist than Tupac and Notorious B.I.G. And a lot of people got on his case for that because they're like, dude, do you know your history on Tupac? And then there was another interview with a rapper that I don't even know this guy's name, but he's just like some unknown rapper that all the kids like. He had it, and he said he did an interview and he did like a swag meter. And he was like, yeah, man, Tupac didn't have no swag. And everybody was like, what? Like,
yeah,
excuse
see,
me?
Stuff
young
like
pup?
That. I understand that, you know, you're looking at the, whether it be the performers, the athlete in your generation. You're looking at them in your era. You're looking at them and say, yeah, you know, LeBron James, yes, he's cool. Yes, he's cool. But you also got to understand, before there was LeBron, there was Magic. There was Michael. There was Bird.
All these great players. You're trying to convince young people that things happened before they were
exactly,
alive?
Exactly, and it's hard to do.
This is what I'm saying. Like, I love and respect this conversation because I agree with both of you, and I think it's absurd that people don't know history. But are we ever going to solve the problem?
No,
like, are we ever going to get anywhere with this?
Where they're just going to get further and further away from it.
Like, boomers are ruining the world. I get it. That's true, too. But millennials aren't going to do anything about it because they're just staring at their phones.
Yeah, but
so I don't know what we want to solve here.
Yeah, people always get on my case because, like, when they ask me, I'm a huge basketball fan, so they ask me who's my top basketball players. And I say, Kobe's always one. And then I put Jordan. They're like, how you put Jordan at two?
Kobe's
I was
not
like,
number one.
I was like, because I watched Jordan tail end of his career. Mm-hmm. I started watching basketball in like 96. That's Kobe's rookie year. Mm-hmm. So I watched Kobe from rookie year all the way to retirement.
I think Jordan won a title in 96.
Yeah, but I mean that's
and 97.
But I didn't get
and 98.
Yeah, I didn't get to know his.
So you watched him win three championships, and you still thought Kobe was better?
Yeah, Kobe won three.
Yeah, Kobe won. Yeah, he won five.
Yeah.
Well, Jordan.
But it's
more
like
than that.
I watched.
I'm just saying.
I watched
in his era. He watched one of the greatest players.
Well, Kobe's great. I'm not arguing
exactly.
That,
so, and it's the same thing with kids these days. Of like,
that's because you're a fan of the Lakers, though,
and that too. Right. But this like kids these days. You know, they're like, you know, I like LeBron over Kobe or Jordan, and that's because they watched LeBron from, you know, St. you know, Vincent Mary, you know, high school all the way to the Cavs and Miami Heat. Right. So they watched his whole entire career. So now they're just like, that's who I'm going to say is my favorite basketball player because I got to watch his stride.
But right. But these kids don't. The younger generation doesn't know. They just look at LeBron. They look at Steph. They look at KD. And they don't look at Mike. They don't look at Magic. They don't look at Bird. They don't look at Isaiah Thomas.
Does anyone know who Elgin Baylor is?
Elgin Baylor, Oscar Robinson. No. Those people. Those are the guys that paved the way. And they were great players.
Pete Maravich.
And they were great players. Wilt Chamberlain. They were great players. But they don't know. It's that they don't know. Choose to know.
They outlawed dunking because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was so good. They outlawed dunking. Think about that. That's insane. Again, if we're asking young people to learn more about history, I think we're just going to be like screaming into the void for the rest of our lives.
Pretty much.
But the people who have seen all of them play will know that Jordan and LeBron are sort of above everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like, I don't think Kobe's even in the conversation with those guys. He's a great player, an all-time great player. But Jordan and LeBron are the two best players I've ever seen play. I didn't watch Wilt Chamberlain play or you know, Lou Alcindor
before
he's
great.
He was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Right, but I've taken the time to learn it because I work in this business.
Absolutely.
So I do think we need to read more as a society. Yeah. Just read more history books. Actual books, not like fake books, but real books.
Number two.
Okay, so we have a lot of interesting discussions during the break, and, you know, I think we can make a podcast based off of that because, you know, we just have so many interesting conversations. And we saw a commercial... And it looked like an E.T. reboot, but I don't know if it was or not, but I'm not going to confirm. And we got in this the whole discussion about people need to come up with original ideas and, you know, try to make new ideas for movies. So I'm going to run this by you because Johnny Depp is doing a musical about Michael Jackson, which a lot of stories have been told about Michael Jackson already, but he is doing it in the perspective of Michael Jackson's glove. Does that intrigue you at all or not?
It does intrigue me. It really does.
I'm not really sure.
I wonder how this is going to go.
Road. Yeah.
I wonder how this is. Will it be a comedy? Will it be one of these dark comedies like?
I think it would have to be dark comedy.
What was it? The Caribbean or whatever it was called.
I have no idea.
The ones he did. The boat ones when he was the. He was Jack.
I know what you're
he was Jack. Whatever his name was.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
If you're going to be historically accurate, it would probably have to be a dark comedy. Unfortunately,
yeah.
Because you can't. I don't think you can do anything around Michael Jackson with it without acknowledging reality. In my opinion.
No, I agree.
Like you have to acknowledge. Like I can love his music still, and then also acknowledge that he was messed up.
And then it's called, he's producing it. There's a screenwriter that wrote it, but it's called For the Love of a Glove.
Oh, God, that's even worse. What are they doing?
you know what? I want to see this. I'm not going to pay to see it. I wait for it to come out on DVD or something.
DVD?
But well,
you going to stores and buy
exactly,
DVDs?
Exactly, you're right. I wait till it come
Dad,
out like
it's
on,
an album, not a CD.
You know, on Hulu or Netflix, one of those things, or Apple Plus.
I can just
I'll wait for it
I just,
then.
I don't want to imagine like a human in a giant glove like saying, Billie Jean is not my lover.
See, but he's not singing
like,
it.
Yeah.
It the,
it's
the,
a musical,
the glove
though.
Is like the movement.
It's a musical. Here's what I'll say. I think it is a fantastic idea. Like,
yeah.
Like from an original idea standpoint, it's
different.
It's different. It's unique. It's creative. It's interesting. I just don't know how you do a musical based on Michael Jackson's life and the love of the glove as the title, knowing all the things we know about Michael Jackson. I just don't think you could. I wouldn't want to be involved in that.
See, now I'm thinking of ideas now. So I can do a movie on Shaq's life from the perspective
every
of his shoe. Yeah.
Yes.
And call it.
There you go.
And call it,
I
Can You Dig It? The Shaquille O'Neal story.
Can you dig it?
The Shaquille O'Neal
story.
Can
you dig the 22s? Because he wore a size 22, right?
That's insane.
Yeah, he did.
That's insane. You wear like a 10.
Exactly. He wears a 22. Like, God.
His
foot
looked
like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's foot. Remember on, you probably didn't see it, when Bruce Lee was fighting Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's right.
In the movie, and he kicked Bruce Lee, and his whole foot took up his chest.
Man, I did see that.
Did you?
Yes. I look up some old stuff.
Mark, you got a little history to your game.
You got a little history.
I got a little history, man. Yeah. So music and movies like that, I'll just usually. I mean, YouTube's your best friend if you want to watch old stuff.
I think what happens is like you get to 30 and you start realizing, oh crap, like there was like a lot of things that happened before I was alive. Like Chase McCabe is now like diving deep into these documentary rabbit holes and stuff, and like it's taking him to his 30s to realize, oh, it's interesting to learn about what happened in the past. And things happened before I was born. How about that?
See, I won't go as far as my grandparents, because my grandparents still watch like old Western movies. Like,
you're not a big spaghetti Western
like
guy?
John Wayne, Gunsmoke, like all that good stuff. I'll stay away from that, but I'll dip in a little history every now and then.
It was Game of Death. That's when Bruce Lee was fighting on different levels.
Do you like those old Kung Fu
movies?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
What about Bruce Leroy?
Bruce Leroy. People probably don't get that reference.
No, they don't. Especially not the young people. Mark Hudspeth, head coach of your Austin Peay Governors, when we return right here on Morning Drive.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.